Good evening and welcome to our city council meeting. We just returned from a closed session. I'll ask our city attorney if there is anything to report.
There is no report.
Thank you. We will call this meeting to order and we will begin with a Pledge of Allegiance by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Here.
Councilmember Moreno.
Here.
Councilmember Kelly.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda. I understand we have to make a modification. Ms. City Manager.
That's correct, Mayor. If we could pull the CDBG item on the consent item. There's some I's we need to dot and T's we need to cross before we can have you approve that, so we do apologize. We got word from the county just this afternoon that we do need to pull that item. It is item A6.
Very good. Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes, with the omission of the minutes for February 25th, I was not in attendance.
Okay. Councilmember Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0 motion passes, except for the minutes. It'll be 4-0.
Yes, and I think we are not on the consent calendar yet anyway, but we are. That is approval of the agenda. We'll record that as a yay for Councilman Kelly and not record his vote on when we get to the consent calendar. We have no presentations. We are now to the consent calendar. Is there any member of the public or council wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, I can entertain a motion on the consent calendar items with item 6 polled and Councilman Kelly abstaining on that one item.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call.
City Hall, there's going to be wine and cheese and other drinks here in the upper rotunda. And what it is a docent recruitment. The Historical Society does a ton of work here at City Hall. They do give tours Monday through Thursday from noon to 2 every day. It's a great way to meet people, to go out and meet people from all over the world. We've had come and tour City Hall. So they're looking for additional volunteers. If you're not interested in being a volunteer, you can still come on out, spend a wonderful evening with some good people, learn a lot about here. About the building and about the history of Atascadero. They're asking for a $10 donation and an RSVP if you could. So give them a call at 466-8341 and leave a message and come on out on Saturday. It's going to be a great event for a very good organization. Again, they've done all of the displays throughout the building, and it's a tireless organization that does a lot for the city and for our community. T-ball update. We have a total of 10 T-ball teams signed up, and this Saturday is one of my favorite days of the year. It is T-ball opening day, and we'll have the mayor there at opening day ceremonies throwing out the first pitch. I know that's always an enjoyable experience. The season will run from March 15th through May 22nd, and games will take place on Tuesday and Thursday evenings at Paloma Creek Park. And I believe Little League is also,
yes.
That is their opening day, and that'll be there at noon. And I heard a rumor that Little League is celebrating their 75th anniversary, so
yes.
We'll probably have something coming before you later to recognize that event. The Paloma and Traffic Way ball fields were recently renovated with pit sand donated for the second straight year by Joe Schlegel of Schlegel Sand and Gravel. We really appreciate that. Those fields are in rough shape without that extra help, and that's a huge donation. We thank Schlegel Sand and Gravel. Storm report. After the recent and much-needed storm earlier this month, staff dealt with numerous fallen branches and street debris issues. There was a large downed tree on San Marcos and flooding issues on Fresno Avenue. But staff worked diligently to keep our storm drains clear and ready for the storm events. As a result, the storm drain system performed very well overall. So considering we got 6 to 8 inches of rain, depending on where you were in town, we did very well. At least Saturday night was our Dancing with the Stars. This event raised over $80,000 for the library expansion. Police Chief Gerald Haley and Councilmember Heather Moreno both competed and both did an amazing job. That was my first time attending the event, and I have to admit that I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was wonderful.
Which one is the chief in this picture?
That's it. There you go. As you can tell, they each had a little bit different style of dance, and we're going for a little bit different thing. We have video clips of each one. So let's start with Councilmember Moreno's beautiful dance performance as Dancing Queen.
That's quite a change right there.
She was incredibly beautiful and talented, so that was wonderful. That was in stark contrast to our police chief. I'm not sure that you're talented. We could go for it. Beautiful, I'm not sure, was quite the right word. We'll show the clip here of Chief Haley, who was the People's Choice Award, so that means the people there at the event voted him and his partner as the favorite dance, and he also won the Best Sport Award. As you put him a platinum wig and a coconut bikini top, I could see why you definitely won that award. Still take votes for whoever you would like. So if you just saw those clips and felt like I need to vote for either one, go for it. They can't win the beautiful trophy, but the library would sure enjoy the funds. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, I believe someone had asked from the audience who won. I believe Rolf Nelson came in first place. Very good. Well, thank you, Rochelle. We'll move on from the city manager report. No council questions, I don't see. And we'll open it up to community forum, an opportunity for any of you to speak to us on any item not on the agenda. Please come forward. Welcome.
My name's David Bence. I live in 3F Meadows, and I've lived here for about 16 years or better now. And what I'm here tonight on is to give you a 13-year history, 14-year history on salaries and fringe benefits in the city of Atascadero. I prepared two spreadsheets that are attached to this letter, and I'm requesting that this letter and the attached spreadsheets be entered into the official record in minutes of the March 11th City Council meeting. The spreadsheet on salaries and benefits show that the city of Atascadero has not disclosed all costs associated with the staffing increases over the last 14 years. Transparency has been ignored, and that the true costs associated with the meet and confer process to grant salaries and fringe benefits has been purposely not disclosed in the staff in the staff reports presented to the City Council. The salaries and benefits spreadsheets shows the true percentages of increased costs for the last 14 years. The spreadsheet also shows what the consumer price index has been for each of those fiscal years compared to the actual percentage granted during that time period. The growth in costs has never been discussed with the City Council because the information was never disclosed at the appropriate time by staff. The second spreadsheet, dealing only with salaries, compared to the Consumer Price Index, and that salaries have significantly exceeded the Consumer Price Index for this 13-year time period. City Council should pay attention to the alarming growth and the percentage of salaries and fringe benefit should strive to limit that expenditure to 60% of the general fund, leaving 40% for other needs, including funds for capital improvements. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
My name's Ted Mort. I'm a resident of Atascadero. And got a little bug in my throat, so excuse me. I'm also a pastor of Atascadero Gospel Chapel. And I'd just like to speak to the Lord, invite his blessing, and thank him for his blessing as we continue tonight. Lord God, I just want to acknowledge your goodness to us. Thank you for just the chance we all have to live in this beautiful city of Atascadero. Lord, we often take for granted the blessings you give us. I've just been reminded so much lately of how when we get plenty of rain, we don't necessarily think about it. That's just the way it happens. But this year, we're so aware of our need. And thank you for the rain we've had. And I would ask you to send more. Lord, we need it. You are the one that controls the weather. And we need more rain. And we ask you to send more, to fill up our reservoirs, our ground basin. And Lord, you bless us in so many ways with our families here, with our quality of life here. And Lord, I thank you for these council members and all the staff that's here. Just the dedication they have, the time they put in, their love for this city and for its citizens. Pray that you would bless them. Pray that you would help them do their jobs well. Pray that tonight as they discuss things that you'd give them wisdom, that they'd recognize good decisions, that they'd recognize right paths. And that in the year to come, that you would guide all of us as citizens of this city to become more of the people you want us to become the city that we can be, where it's a great place to live, where right is valued, and just help us to recognize the blessings you give us and to thank you for them. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
My name is Scott Sayer, and I live on Tolosa Road here in Atascadero. I've been dealing with an issue with homeowners insurance rates for the last 2 years. I'd like to read a couple paragraphs from a report done by the Atascadero City Council staff report. Fire department. All structures within 5 miles of a fire station and within 1,000 feet of a fire hydrant will receive a 4. Our residence is within 1,000 feet of a fire hydrant and within 5 miles of a responding station. And we received went from a class rating of 5 to a class rating of 9. This resulted in a quintupling of our homeowner's insurance rate from under $500 a year to over $2,500 a year. The fire department has been cooperative in supplying us the ISO report for Atascadero. I talked with John Neal with the Atascadero Mutual Water from correspondence I had with him. He said basically we don't get involved with the ISO rating. That's something the city fire department handles. Nothing has changed in the way we provide water service to your area. Based on our hydraulic model, the fire hydrant at the end of Toloso Avenue has an estimated flow of 250 gallons per minute. We are working on system improvements in the area to increase this flow. The improvements will require upgrading an existing booster station and construction of a water storage tank. To end, we said we're aware of the limited fire flow in the area and are working towards a solution. So basically, while there's been an improvement in Atascadero overall with their ISO rating, it's cost me considerably more, and there's evidently two areas of Atascadero that considered substandard water flow to their fire hydrants. So it's not just a matter of being within the certain distance of the fire hydrant and the responding station. I have yet to get an answer from anybody how many homes are going to be receiving rate increases from their insurance companies due to the inadequate water flows in these areas.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Jerry Clay, 7285 Sycamore Road. Mayor Tom and Council, about 4 months ago or so, I came to the Council and asked about the 4th of July celebration, if the Council would vote for us to have the 4th of July celebration as a city-sponsored event. And basically, I didn't get an answer that night or after that. I came back a couple weeks later and asked the same question about the 4th of July celebration. If, you know, we need something right away to know to get this done. You know, we're supposed to be the patriotic city, and it confuses me that we can't have this simple celebration. I talked to Andy McMean today, and he wants to bring his carousel again. The county band wants to play. They've contacted Bob. Gail Cadillac told me that she would handle the concessionaires. Cacho, I talked to Cacho. He said that he would finance the zoo so it'd be free for everybody, and he really enjoyed doing that last year. The Kennedy Nautilus, I'm sure, will do their 5 and 10K run like they did. I'm sure the Lions Club would do their pancake breakfast again. Don Cross is in the audience. He provides us with a wonderful PA system. And, you know, it bothers me that I haven't got an answer. It's a family day. There's no alcohol involved. We have the bouncy things. We have games for kids. We have a pie eating contest. It's just a wonderful family day. I need an answer. And, you know, it doesn't cost the city anything. And anybody that thinks it does, I'll sit down with them and show them why it doesn't. But please give me an answer, yes or no, on the 4th of July celebration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers approaching? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment and bring it back to staff. A few questions raised, and we may not be able to respond to all tonight. I am concerned with Mr. Bent's statement about purposely not disclosing something, and if I could have our city manager respond to his concerns briefly, and then we can perhaps have a more in-depth report at a future council meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. So as part of negotiations last year, staff did disclose to the City Council the true costs of all proposals out there. We did try and break them down to the extent that it's possible to the system with the system we have. Council was provided with numbers in total and some breakout numbers. I know that there were some requests for numbers broken out in a different way, which would have taken quite a bit of staff overtime at a time that staff was broken out. Those requests weren't necessarily...
I've sit on a number of regional boards where we look at salaries comparison across the county, across the state. And my impression was that, in fact, I think we were the only city in our county that did not get a COLA for a number of years, and that we are probably, even though we have a policy of having a salary range on average with the other counties, I believe we're actually below that with these tough economic times. So in your opinion, I would think that we're actually below market on overall salaries. Now, we will be looking at this in depth later this year as part of our budget process, but is there any sense that you have that we are overpaying our employees?
Compared to other cities in the county, we are at the low end, or have typically been at the low end of that pay scale. I certainly believe that the employees would never say that they were overpaid. I am a firm believer that they're not overpaid. We have a fantastic group of employees that do a lot of hard work and are very loyal to us. But I understand the public's concern to make sure that we are competitive, that we are not overpaying the employees, and so I understand that. But while at the same time, we need to make sure that we are competitive with the market so we don't lose those very hardworking, very loyal employees that we have.
Yeah, thank you. And I do think we will have budget hearings this summer, if I'm correct. We'll be reviewing the budget more in detail.
We are actually in the middle of a two-year budget cycle, so we will have a mid-year or mid-cycle review. It won't be nearly as in-depth as we usually do on a budget cycle. Yes.
But that'll happen more in the summertime. We'll have a
that
update.
Is correct.
Okay,
yes.
We'll have a chance to look at that a little more in detail. And I do think, in general, I'd say I'm very pleased. I think the council is pleased with our employees, and we do appreciate that they are doing a pretty good job with minimum resources. We're short-staffed. We're a little behind on COLAs, but they do an incredible job, and we want to be supportive. And we take it as our responsibility to focus on revenue. We are looking for every opportunity we can as a council to try to increase so that we can meet some of those needs we have in our community. We, too, are concerned.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor and Council. We have worked with the water company. We are aware of these two zones. These zones are under-pressurized, and actually for fire service, it's more of a concern of volume. The fire hydrants mentioned in this area and next to Mr. Slayer's house serves about 230 to 250 gallons per minute. What ISO requires for that fire hydrant to be rated is 1,000 gallons per minute. And without 1,000 gallons per minute, it is as if that hydrant does not exist. It's considered unworthy or substandard to the extent that they won't give graded calculation. So homes that are served by that undersized or underflowing hydrant are automatically reduced to a class 9 within the city. Water company is aware of this. I actually talked to Mr. Serber, the ISO representative, after talking to Mr. Slayer, and forwarded Mr. Slayer the ISO report, and we are aware of it. It is an area that is being worked on to improve, and as systems are improved, these situations will be remedied and go away. And also, I might mention to the council, as a other extreme, there are some homes that still do not have any fire hydrant service further up on that western side, up on Falcon Road, and we actually have water tanks that are used as the standby water source for these homes, rather than telling these individuals that they just flat can't build. And so we are addressing this the best we can. It is worth noting that oftentimes people with these lower flow hydrants in the new ISO classification, if they have an existing policy, this is not 100% the case, but an existing policy can remain in effect for years until a change occurs, till a property is sold, until somebody creates an addition to the property, and then the property is basically reassessed. It's considered a change in the policy, and a lot of times the policies are updated at that point. Mr. Slayer's question about how many of these homes in the town have this situation, it certainly could be calculated how many homes are served by underflowing hydrants, but it would be difficult to tell who's been affected from a policy standpoint unless they call us and let us know.
Thank you. And again, this is primarily a water company issue. It's not in our jurisdiction, but you've made the water company aware of where these problem areas are. And are they working on this? Do they have a plan to address those problems in the future?
Mr. Neal assured
inadequacy of the infrastructure.
Well, I would say we've done the best we can. Certainly nothing replaces a fully functioning 1,000-gallon-per-minute hydrant.
So could you keep the council informed anyway on that issue? And that is something we would like to see a priority for the water company, certainly because we've always put safety as our top priority. Was there any other council comments on that? I'm Councilwoman Fonzie.
Just out of curiosity, Chief, what is the other area that's got the pressure problem?
It was El Verano area up off of, what we call it Sand Hill affectionately, up off Dolores.
Is there anything that the individual homeowner can do to improve this, like sprinkling their home or something else I'm not aware of?
Certainly sprinklers, fire safety in general, are going to prevent the start and spread of a fire, sprinklers obviously being the best. The problem is when the water is substandard to ISO's rating, they still will pretty much turn a blind eye to the sprinklers because they're looking for that water supply at the street within 1,000 feet.
And you mentioned when a change occurs, then it triggers the reevaluation. When our ISO rating was upgraded, is this what triggered it?
No, not at all. This just is a change as the insurance companies go through and update their policies, either through change or individual policies or individual insurance companies choose to update them every 3 years. I know mine is updated every 3 years, and that's certainly at the discretion of the insurance company.
Thank you.
Thank you, and appreciate you being on top of that issue. Jerry Clay brought up about 4th of July, and I thought we did review the events that we had considered that we would try to help sponsor. We weren't necessarily going to do any work, as often these are done through the community volunteer efforts, most of our community events. But could you refresh my memory? It seemed like that was on one that we were considering waiving fees, or have we made that decision at a staff level yet?
As part of strategic planning, we did review special events and special events as a whole. There were a lot of questions, particularly about how much staff time each event took. It seemed that there was some council consensus, but formal action wasn't taken to try and keep the events that we currently do and continue to do that. I don't know that 4th of July was addressed specifically, and I'm not positive that I know
that, but I would...
Tom, can I just kind of bring up a little update where we're kind of thinking about this is actually kind of downscale the whole day. We've, in the past, we've done it 2 years, and we have discovered that it's gone too long during the day. Andy McBean, we saw today, and he would want to bring his carousel back out there. As Jerry said, Kacha will pay for the zoo, so we don't have to worry about that. The gentleman from the county band has contacted me a couple times. They want to play. There's no cost for that. And I think we're getting down time-wise, like Jerry said, where we kind of need a decision. And, you know, I think, you know, getting the park at no cost is okay. I think we did have some public works people, I think, that had to come out and put some barricades up for the marathon in the morning. Pretty much minimal. I don't think we ever had any significant cost with it. And I don't know the proper way to doing it, but I don't know if we could possibly take a straw vote or something saying that we endorse it so we can start doing some of the planning. And I could give the man from the community band a call back and say, you know, yes, we are going to have a 4th of July day in the park, but we're really going to downscale it, probably get it over with by 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Well, and again, I think most community events, again, we're relying on community members to take care of insurance of anyone involved and any costs. And again, I've worked with Cacho for a couple of years on this. We do appreciate that he is basically covering the costs for the zoo. And I talked with Lois Capps, who is considering chipping in on that as well. So it's not an agendized item. I thought it had been addressed at strategic planning, but I think the issue would be whether we are waiving the park use fees or not. I don't think there was we are not in a position to offer anything beyond that. And I don't know if we want to have that. I'm going to look to our city attorney to see if we can even have any further discussion than we are currently having, or if we want to maybe put this on for our next agenda.
I think the discussion you've had so far has been fine, but I think we've probably reached the point now where if you want to have further discussion, especially if you're going to be talking about spending some money or waiving some fees, that should be an item that's on your future agenda.
Now, and I appreciate that events have to be planned in advance, and I think our city manager is not going to be at the next meeting in 2 weeks.
That is correct.
I would ask that we answer. So what I understand is from strategic planning is that the events we had done in the past, we were going to continue that minimum commitment. We're not in a position to expand, but it, I believe, was on the list of events that had been done. And what I think I heard you say is that the 4th of July is an event that the cost could be covered for. We can forego the revenue of charging the fees, and we can cover the cost of putting up the barricades. Those are the only two things that's in the budget, and that's all that was requested.
That is correct. That is what is in the budget. That is our status quo. We would need to take action if you wanted to change that.
So what I've heard, then the answer is, Jerry, is it's in the budget to do what you've requested, to waive the fees and to provide, and I, no, we're not going to have a discussion now, Jerry. It's not on the item.
I thought maybe we had, but it was not anything significant.
But I think
we're covered.
I think,
and I'm happy.
Yeah, I think the issue is we are not taking any action. Staff has already had in the budget what Jerry Clay has requested, so we are done with that item. Am I correct?
You're saying
we go forward. I'm saying the staff have already budgeted to waive the fees for you to have a 4th of July event. And does that cover it, Councilman Kelly? So I think we're done with that item. And we still have, I haven't closed community forums, so if someone else would like to speak, we'll go ahead and do that now. I don't see anyone else approach, so we'll close community forum, bring it back to council, and move on to the next item, which is B1, public hearing, discussion of Title VII, Public Works Code text, and Title VIII, Building Code text amendments. And I believe our city engineer, Russ Thompson, has that.
Yes, thank you, Mayor and Council. Let me get the PowerPoint booted up here. Several code sections and updated the building code section and some fire code issues. And this item was, there was some discussion at the council level that wanted some more input and some more analysis and some options brought back to the council. And so that's what we're doing tonight. We're not going to be modifying the ordinances tonight, but there are some key decision points that need to be talked through and discussed. And once we get your input tonight, then we will come back in 30 days or just as soon as we possibly can with the ordinance modifications that are tailored to the results of the discussion tonight. So tonight we're asking council to provide staff direction on the amendments to Title VII and Title VIII, mainly regarding the use of septic systems and the extension of sewers to provide sewer service to lots, whether they're existing lots with houses or vacant lots that need sewer service, maybe a lot that has a failed septic system and has some challenges providing sewer service to it. So as I said, back in November, we began this discussion, and some of the key issues were the current rules that require if somebody needs sewer service to their property, our current municipal code requires that they extend the sewer all the way across their entire frontage. So it's not a matter of having the option to come to, say, the low corner of their property, maybe extending it only 15 or 20 feet across their frontage. But they have to extend it whatever the width of their lot is. And most of the time in areas where we have and provide sewer service, these are in areas of smaller lots, typically 150, 125 feet wide. But there are some rare cases where there are wider lots. But most of them are fairly small, you know, city in-town lots. The question was raised about septic system failures and having our regulations not preclude somebody that has an existing lot that might be large enough to reinstall new leach fields at the time their septic system fails, which allows them to respond quickly. And there certainly is cost and timing issues for providing new sewer service. So tonight we'll talk about some of the building code issues and then also our municipal code issues. So the current code requirements in the 2013 California Building Code, it dictates, it says sewer is required where it's deemed available, quote unquote.
And they on acreage, the houses are close to the street and the septic systems are in the rear of the house and they usually discharge to the rear. So you could actually, you know, run close to 100 feet just to get to the front of the house. So is that measurement from the discharge of the house, or is it from the shortest point from the sewer line to the closest point to the house?
It's not defined in the building code. It's not defined in our municipal code. But the way staff has interpreted that over the years is that we go from the closest corner of the house to the property corner on a straight as the bird flies, to the property corner, and then from that property corner to the end of the sewer main. So it's the straightest direct route, you know, from the corner of the structure to the existing sewer main. That's not to say, somebody could say, from the corner of the house as a crow flies to the sewer main, and, you know, and not try to jog around the property corner. But staff has been consistently interpreting this in town here, from the house to the corner, property corner, then from the property corner to the nearest sewer. Getting back to the building code does allow a provision for the city in residential cases to waive this determination of availability. And it's a standard that states for residential occupancies, the public sewer may be considered as not being available by the authority having jurisdiction. So there's no other discussion, but to me that says that we in residential areas that we have the option to make a judgment call of where the sewer is deemed available or not. So then in our municipal code, like I said, it's consistent with the California Building Code. We use the same 200-foot standard. And in Section 7-3.003, it says when available, the owner shall connect upon septic system failure. So it's not a may or should, it is a shall. That when your septic system fails and the sewer meets that 200-foot standard, you have to connect to the sewer. And there is only a minor exception for if somebody did a small addition, say of 400, and it's limited to 400 square feet or less, that they could continue to use their septic system if they had a small addition. Extensions are not practical due to perimeter or problem lots or lots that are shown in the sewer master plan to be served from another direction. So even though it does have an out in there, it's very specific in how and where those waivers are issued. And many times people really come to us and say, I just can't afford it. You know, it's too expensive for me to extend the sewer. Can I shorten it up? And that financial hardship is not included in this language in our municipal code. So the current, if a party or a builder was going to extend the sewer, you know, it's not a necessarily an easy process. They have to go out and hire an engineer and a surveyor to do plans, develop plans that get submitted to the city for plan check, review, and permitting. That takes time, not only to get quotes from an engineer, but have them do their field work and their design and get it into the city. Once we approve it, they hire a contractor, go to construction, and then they end up paying connection fees. So it's not a short process. I mean, you're talking months and months of time. I think realistically, if you had a couple hundred feet sewer extension, by the time they engage the engineer, got the plans in, got approved, hired the contractor, get a hole in their schedule to get out there. I mean, you might be talking about 4 or 5 months, you know, before you could have, you know, construction underway. So if you're sitting there with a failed septic system, certainly that's going to be a big concern, because you're going to be pumping out your septic tank every, you know, 4 or 5 days, or, you know, depending on how much water you use. So it could become a real hardship. And so typically, just to give you an order of magnitude for, say, a 250-foot-long sewer extension, you know, of relatively shallow depth, nothing strange going on, you could be looking at $35,000 or $40,000 to extend a sewer. And we do allow reimbursement agreements. So if a person extends a sewer and spends a bunch of money providing sewer service to their lot, every lot in between is then benefiting from that extension, and so they can file a sewer reimbursement agreement with us. And it, and we have many of these. I think we have 17 active sewer reimbursement areas throughout town. We just recently completed and closed out the one that went out to the Home Depot site. And so, but those exist condensed time frame. We process septic system replacement permits very quickly. Sometimes it's an over-the-counter, same-day type of approval, but it's a much shorter time frame. In a standard septic system, if you had a vacant lot and we're putting in a tank and leach fields for just a conventional type system, you'd be looking at $7,000 to $9,000. So you can see there's certainly a big difference in cost. And if you had a failed leach field, and you had to hire a contractor to install new leach fields, but your tank and all the plumbing was okay, you know, you might only be looking at $3,000 to $5,000 to hire a contractor and get him out there to make the repairs. So tonight, the decision points from our discussion in November appeared to staff to be these three conditions, or these three decision points. So, one, if the sewer fronts an existing lot, and they either are developing a vacant lot or have a failed septic system where that sewer goes in front of their entire property frontage already, do we want them to be required to connect to the sewer, or do they have the option to reinstall a septic system? The second decision would be if the house is within 200 feet of an existing sewer, do they have to connect, or do they have to install, or can they have the option of installing a septic system? And we'll go through each one of these, and I have some diagrams and some pictures, case histories, that'll help make these a little more descriptive. And then the third one is, if they do extend the main, do we want them to continue to extend it all the way across the frontage of their lot, or to just some point that's convenient, that makes engineering sense to their engineer in the city, that yes, that's an appropriate, you know, physical connection point to the sewer system, wherever that might be, and not just arbitrarily say you have to extend it across the entire frontage. So those are the three points tonight. So we'll start with the first question. If a lot fronts a sewer main and builds on a vacant lot or has a failed septic system, do they have to connect? And so about 50% of town is served by sewer. We have roughly about 5,000 sewer connections and about 5,000 septic systems. So generally, you know, the sewer system serves more of the core area of town, and then the outlying areas are on septic systems. The number is 8,000. I mean, but this is not an exact number. I didn't look and research, but it's just an approximation. About half of town is on sewer. Half of our lots are on septic.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Fonzi.
Russ, you keep using the word failed septic system, and that's one of the predicates for you're making them hook up to the sewer. Could you explain that? Let's say someone has an older septic system. They have built-in obsolescence. After a while, they just have to be replaced. Is that failed?
Failed, I mean, I guess it depends on who you talk to. I think certainly if there's effluent bubbling up to the surface, that is a failed system. Many times, probably in the real estate business, when you have a system on septic that one of the sign-offs or inspections, you have to have the tanks and, pumped out and inspected, and many times those septic pumpers, when they evacuate the tank and if water comes back from the leach field into the septic tank, they say it's failed because that's the leach fields are saturated. The water is built up to the top and it's actually forcing it back in. It may be functioning just fine if the water use is low and there's enough, you know, grade difference, it might be enough to push that water into the ground, and so the people may not be aware that it's failing. But that's a common trigger for calling something a failed septic system. But typically, if you know, a neighbor will complain about odors and there'll be a wet, you know, there'll be a big yard and there'll be a wet, big green, wet area that, you know, is wet and soggy. That, in my book, is a failed system, certainly.
Following that logic, couldn't you relocate it at a much lesser expense than hook up to the sewer?
Yes. And that's
not allowable, or that is allowable now?
It's not allowable now if you're within, if the house is within 200 feet of a public sewer.
So that's the question before us tonight.
Got it. Okay. And also in the report, you mentioned a 1 acre size for the lot. There are many lots that are in the sewered area that are much smaller than 1 acre. Can you explain to me the importance of the 1 acre since we don't have wells that are individual?
Right. So to create a new lot in town, you cannot create a new lot as part of the subdivision process that relies on septic systems and city or municipal water that's smaller than 1 acre. So that's a regional board requirement. You can install it on lots smaller than an acre. So it's many times lots might be on a rocky part of town over behind the high school is an area where there's extremely small lots and 25-foot wide lots and very hillside terrain. You just can't get a septic system to work on them. And so slowly, periodically, as those people want to build, they have to extend the sewer out into those areas. But you can do it, but you have to have the right conditions to allow it.
Is it on?
Yep.
There you go.
Okay, thank you. I know that you think about the perk rate when you're considering whether the septic tank has failed or not. How does that go into your decision that it needs to hook up to the sewer or it could go with septic?
The slower the perk rate is, you know, the larger the system has to be. And so that many times, if the perk rate is, say, a high rate, say 120 minutes an inch or 180 minutes per inch, is a very slow rate. So unless you have a large lot, say out on, you know, on the west side of town with a lot of flat area, you're not going to get a conventional leach field type system to work there. There are many different types of, you could, So it's the perk rate. If you had zero perk rate, then you can't design it. You could try to do an evaporative system, but we haven't had an evaporative system in town for 20 years that I know. There are some lots that don't have perk rate and are nowhere near a sewer system that are just going to stay vacant until, you know, somebody wants to go to the regional board and have kind of an experimental system approved. Did that answer your question?
Well, let's say you had a septic fail on a lot that had a good perk rate. Would that influence your decision that they would have to hook up to the sewer, they could go with a septic again?
One of the questions from staff's point of view is that I think it's reasonable that if sewer is not immediately in front of your property and it would take you'd have to extend the sewer to get it to your property. If you can technically prove that you have the perk rate and the available area to install a septic system, I don't see why that would be a problem. And that'll be a recommendation as one of the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have Councilman Keller.
For septic systems, very rarely have we ever put just a regular one in. Most of them, due to a little higher perk rates throughout the town, required engineered systems that actually cost quite a bit more than those numbers there. And I think if you know, I've had both. And the joy of my life is when I actually came to town and was able to hook up to a sewer after having lived with septic systems. And I think, I don't know if we've taken into consideration some of the new requirements of the Regional Water Quality Board when the new system has to be replaced if it comes under the requirements of, you know, the 100% expansion field and what have you. But then at the same time, I think if somebody did have a lot that had a perk rate, a low perk rate of, what is it, 30 or 35, where you don't have to have an engineer system, you might be able to have the consideration just to replace the system then, because then we're getting into kind of an even deal on the money. So, you know, I think they both can work with some little massaging to them.
So we're sticking to questions at this time. We'll still go to public comment, and but we have Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant, then followed by Councilman Moreno.
Hey, Russ, just for clarification, when you're, so this question number one, when it says failed septic system, you're talking about something that is non-repairable and it's not feasible to re-engineer and have one on the site. Is that what this is saying?
The current standards don't, if the sewer fronts your property and you have a failed system, the current standards don't give you the option of putting in a septic system. So that's one of the questions tonight. Do we stay with that standard, or do we allow a separate option, allow a separate option that if they can have a septic system engineered on their site and it works out, then they would have that available to them.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Moreno.
Thank you. Two questions. One to follow up on Councilmember Fonzie's question about sort of, let's say, planned obsolescence or things wear out over time. Is there any time that a septic system needs to be replaced but it's not considered a failure?
Well, I think typically if it's not broke, you know, don't fix it. But they do have a finite life, and what happens is over time, you know, you have your septic tank and that's where all the solids settle out, and you're supposed to pump that every 3 to 5 years, but most people don't. I mean, to be realistic, some people do, a lot of people don't. So what happens is when the tank doesn't get out there, so it's not to say it can't happen, you know, they can last a long time, but by and large, they absolutely do have to be replaced, you know, eventually.
And that replacement is considered failure. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. Is there ever a situation where, oh, it's time to replace the septic system, and it's not considered a failure?
In all my years of practicing, I never had anybody come to me and say, you know, I think I want to replace my leach fields. It's always in response to the, mm-hmm. you know, the it's backing up, it's surfacing in the yard, my neighbor's okay. complaining about the odor.
Okay, so got it. My second question is, in this question one scenario, what is the cost to someone who, let's say, if I consider my own situation, and I know several, I mean, we live in a hilly neighborhood, so I'm certainly not the only one. So let's say I'm 100 feet from the road, maybe where sewer is, but I'm at a, let's say, 10% grade to get up to the road or something like that. What kind of a cost does that add to the homeowner to connect to sewer?
Yeah, so you'd have to pump more than likely, and that is the worst of all conditions. I mean, to me as an engineer, it's a last resort. You know, you don't, every time the power goes out, you have to stop using water, stop flushing toilets. I mean, that's not realistic. So it's, and that may be an exception, as Councilmember Kelly said, that maybe in those cases where gravity flow isn't attainable, that there is an option to continue to use septic.
And so our current, the current code, the way it is, does not make an exception for that, but it seems that maybe that has not come up yet.
I don't know that it's come up in, you know, my recollection. I mean, certainly there's a lot of lots in our, you know, with our hilly terrain, there are a lot of lots that would face that condition. Mm-hmm.
I think what was said in the staff report is that we haven't had a lot of failed septic tanks. So I'm assuming that in the few that we've had, we just haven't had that situation. But over the next 50 years or something, that's bound to occur.
Could vary, yes, okay. Likely would.
Thank you, Russ.
Councilman Kelly.
Do we have any remaining lines in town that are pressurized that would omit a residential house from hooking up to it? Wasn't the line on El Camino pressurized for a while from the pump station, and we fixed that?
Well, we have force mains, so we have 13 lift stations throughout town. They all have
Councilman Moreno, there might be a case where you don't have a failed system, and through time you want to add a bathroom, so you have to add capacity. And if you're in a situation where maybe originally septic system was in pre-sewer, your neighbors brought sewer in, you're wanting to do something that now either under the new rules or existing rules with some expansion, and you potentially want to increase the tank capacity, increase field or something under the current rules, would you then be required to hook up to the sewer if rather than expanding the system?
Only if you were within 200 feet of an existing right. sewer line.
So if you were within, let's say, before you weren't, and now you are within 200 feet, and something came up that you wanted to basically change the system under our current rules, now you would be required. You wouldn't have the option of just expanding your system.
So if you were doing a project that added over 400 square feet of building area, that would trigger the connection to the sewer.
Right, so that's kind of an example of what I think Councilman Moreno was getting at, is though it's not a failed system, you might replace a system, and this would be a choice where you couldn't even have the option.
Yep.
Thank you. Let me see the lights here. Councilwoman Fonzie.
This might be a question for Warren. Warren, I thought if you added a bedroom, that triggered an addition to your expansion of your septic tank. Is that correct?
Well, the size of the septic systems is based on bedrooms. So if you do add bedrooms, we do require the engineers to provide calculations to demonstrate that the existing system has capacity, which is usually the size of the tank. So if it was unable to accommodate the demand from a new bedroom, then that would require an expansion of the system.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is it sounds like perhaps that 460 square feet addition would sometimes be triggered by something else like a bedroom.
Yeah, that Warren's correct. Our standards do. It's so many square feet per bedroom. So, I mean, a new bedroom, you would have to do an analysis to show that you had capacity, that the septic tank was the right size and the leach fields were long enough.
Thank you.
Good point. Other council questions? Seeing none, we'll open it up to the public.
Wait.
Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. Yeah. We're only on question one. We have two more to go before we go to the public.
And we could do this. I mean, there's three questions, and I have some exhibits. So as you, we've kind of talked through some of the issues, but I've got exhibits for each of three. We could either go to public comment after each question or wait to the end.
I think it's going to be wise if we push through. I'm going to direct council to resist questions unless they really need to. Let's get through your whole presentation, get to public comment, and then I think we've done more complicated things. I think we can push through these at the end. So go ahead.
Great. Okay, so we're still on question one. This is where going in front of the lot. The other option would be the current standard would be option two, is where we would have to install a new sewer lateral from the house to the in a main connection. So relatively straightforward. Again, you know, comparison, they're actually pretty similar in cost. Again, assuming it's a standard system and nothing elaborate or a high perk rate area, the septic system might cost $7,000 to $9,000, where the sewer lateral might cost in the ballpark of $7,800 to $8,000. So that's question one. And so staff's recommendation on option one is that, you know, with the sewer system there fronting their lot, all things being, you know, equal, that the cost-wise to connect or reinstall a septic system, that the sewer provides a better long-term solution for a neighborhood where it's available. So our recommendation would be that this be the standard, is where the gravity main fronts your lot, that you go ahead and connect to the sewer system. Question two is, if the lot does not front on the sewer but is within 200 feet, whether they're building a new home or have a failed system, do they extend the main and connect? And the current code, again, requires that you extend the main. So here in this example, you have lot A there that wants to either install a septic system or build a structure that's going to require sewer capacity. And the sewer is either at the property corner or just downstream from their property. Whoops. The wrong way. So our current code would require that they extend that main across the front and connect to the sewer. It's not to say that they couldn't install that leach field. So the pros and cons of that, and there's, you know, the first option is they extend the sewer, lowers the cost to the adjacent owner, because the adjacent owner on the, you know, further up the street, eventually may have to extend that sewer. And so by allowing the leach field works, whether they're within 200 feet or not, they have the option to install a leach field. So that's, that would be question number two. And the extension number, or question number three, is to extend where, whether we extend it all the way across the frontage or to a convenient point. So the first option, and this is the example, same neighborhood, lot A would have, per our current standards, would at the yellow dot there, if that's the manhole, would extend it all the way across their frontage, approximately, in this case, 170 feet. So they have 120 feet of frontage. They had to go 50 feet further down the street. So the property owner A would extend it 170 feet, and then each property owner would extend it the width of their lot frontage. And that's the current policy and the way sewers kind of get extended.
Yeah, are you close to being finished with this?
Just to the last slide, I didn't understand the CO.
Okay, go ahead with your question on this slide.
You said lot A, 170 feet to CO, CO, and then MH, MH.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's, so he would, today, the way we would make him extend it 170 feet to a clean out. CO is a clean out, so he wouldn't have to build an expensive manhole since the extension was relatively close to the existing manhole. The first two property owners would be able to extend it and just install a clean out at the end of the line. It wouldn't be until we got up to lot C, which is kind of at the beginning of a curve and it was fairly distant from the existing manhole, that lot C would then have to install a manhole at the end of his sewer. And lot D similarly would probably end up putting in a manhole. So it would cost a little more. Sorry about that. So the current code, lot owner A, like I said, extends at 170 feet. If the option is, instead of doing the frontage, we only make them extend it the minimum amount to get to their property corner. So option two here would be that property owner A, maybe he only extends it 50 feet, gets it to the corner of his property, and then his sewer main can connect into that short stub there that he extended the sewer. So he extends it, you know, about 50 feet in this example, and that saves him about 120 feet. So it's a significant savings to him. When the neighbor comes along, you know, years later or whenever, and he needs to extend it, again, we only require him to get it to savings. So the pros and cons of this option would be, you know, the first option where everybody extends it across their frontage, it's consistent with past policy, and it then does minimize the disruption in front of the neighbor's property when it comes time to extend the sewer, because it's already all the way across his property. Option two, like I discussed, benefits the first owner, and what will happen is these property owners will then, you know, extend the sewer line, you know, across their lot to get it to the low corner and then dive down into the street. You know, if it's done right, that can work, but that might lead to, you know, problems later trying to locate a sewer lateral that's zigging and zagging through trees to get to that low corner. So staff really doesn't have a preference on this. I mean, I think it's, you're certainly, if you don't require them to extend it across their entire frontage, it is going to be a one-time savings to that first owner. Chances are, though, you know, the second and third people are going to be faced with extending it, you know, the same distance or a similar distance. There's certainly a wide variety of options. I mean, these are not, you know, it depends on the width of the lot and how far you have to extend it. But I think this gives an example of that lot frontage issue. From a staff's point of view, I don't have a strong preference either way. I think to be consistent with past policy is important, but by the same token, you are saving that first owner from the cost of extending that sewer. I think we're pretty well. Conclusion, like we talked earlier, septic system failures are fairly rare. Sewer extensions for failed septic systems are fairly rare. We've only had two of the eight sewer extensions in the last couple of years have been due to a failed septic system. And at that same time, you know, there have been six sewer connections along existing sewers that have connected to the sewer in front of their street in that same two-year period. And just to kind of size up the magnitude of the problem, we looked at the system, and there's about 53 locations where the sewer could be extended, you know, in our existing system. 28 of those clearly are going to continue to go further up the street, and about 25
to public. It looks to me like most of the problems through this old policy have been solved. Where there were really problem areas on the septic, the sewer's been extended, and now we're at a point where that old policy may not be as critical because we're just not having the problems to address. If it was already broken, we've kind of had to fix it. Is that basically true? It's slowed down. We don't have a lot of areas now that we're looking at massive potential failure because there's a lot of undersized lots nowhere near a sewer system.
Yeah, there have been problem areas in the past that now have sewer systems. So we don't really have areas of town where there's concentrated failures, but certainly if somebody's faced with where they have to extend the sewer system for a failed septic system, it's a major expense and it's a time sink for them. And I think in our recommendations, if it's possible to provide service to a lot where they can show that they can install a septic system, I don't know why, you know, it's not critical. The city doesn't absolutely have to serve every lot, you know, with sewer. We don't have those issues. I think they should be given the option. If they can show that it's technically feasible to install a septic system, they should have that option.
So I think we've focused.
If it doesn't front their lot.
Yes. We've been focusing, I think we have a lot of empathy for our property owners. We've focused on how do we reduce the cost for each property owner. And it looks that this is not an issue that by decreasing hookups, it really impacts sewer rates for anybody else. We're not planning on some level. In a way, the sewer system is well funded, as I understand. So it's not going to we're not going to be cost shifting to anyone else if we change the policy at this point.
Yeah, there's not a lot of these. And like you said, over 2 years, we've had eight connections. Two of those required extensions to the system.
And is it feasible that we could even make this a choice to the property owner if, one, they're going to decide, do they want to do a septic or hook to the sewer? And let's say for whatever reason they say, well, I want to hook to the sewer. Could that be optional that they could choose to do the closest point or they could choose to extend it all the way to the end of their property? And it might be, one, I want the cheapest way I can go, or two, I could choose that.
Yes.
And then I think you answered my other question. I wonder if there were areas in town that are still notorious poor septic areas that we might want to say it's not realistic. We would encourage everyone to participate because the whole neighborhood is going to need sewer at some point. We don't have any of those areas left anymore, in your opinion?
Yeah, nothing that's just screaming out for attention. I mean, it's there are some issues that, you know, along Tascadero Creek, like Carmelita Avenue, that there have been, you know, water quality issues raised in the creek, and so it's not to say in the future that, you know, we may identify that septic systems are a major contributor to a ground or a surface water quality issue that may require sewers be extended. But we don't know that now, and there's nothing on our radar right now that says, hey, we need to extend sewer into that area.
And that question would really be answered by someone other than us. I'm assuming if you're in an area, a problem area like that, the Regional Water Board is going to say, you can't put in a septic in that area because there's groundwater intrusion or whatever. So, again, it would come down to the simple choice. If you can get an approved PERC and an approved engineered system in that passes the water board, we wouldn't care, I'm guessing.
Yeah, our current design standards meet the regional board standards. What the tests we require and our design methods and inspection methods meets the regional board's requirements, so we're good there.
And my last question, kind of a concern area, is we don't want to change the rules on folks in the middle of the pipe, so to speak. If we already have some existing agreements in place where folks have basically fronted money for extensions and they were kind of led to believe that, you know, they were going to get reimbursed at some point farther up the path, was that the case where there were about 25 of those situations? I'd be cautious that we don't create an unintended consequence where we change the rules on somebody and there's a consequence.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that point. We have 17 current sewer reimbursement districts that are active. We did look at a handful of them to see what language.
Look at that piece and make clear to the public. I almost would consider going to the extent of notifying folks in that area that, you know, I'm not sure what the impact is on those folks. They've fronted some money with the understanding that what we said, if you do this, someday you're going to get reimbursed. And I would just want to be very careful on that piece.
Because those agreements were formulated and drafted in a time period where you did have to connect. If the sewer fronted your lot, the code requires you to connect. So
yeah, and
we
so I'm just
want to make an exemption, or that would be a legal question, that in those areas that have existing sewer reimbursement districts, we may be obligated to make them connect.
Yeah, I think we want to be able to consider that category separately.
Yep.
Just in case. I'll go to Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I have a couple problems with the reimbursable part of it. I think if you look at that map and somebody puts in, say, 150 or 200 feet in front of their house, they're still going to have to reimburse the guy that put the first link in, and it's just going to hopscotch on down the road. And our roads, you know, I think just, you know, putting a little bit in here, a little bit in there, I think that has led to some of the problems that we already have. And then when it comes to the engineering, I think we're just going to create a nightmare if we want to engineer 150 feet here, 75 feet there. I think, you know, the engineering should at least comprise from a start to a finish point so we make sure we get the grades in the right place and what have you. So I think that the extension part of the sewer, I have some problems with that, not only with the mechanics of doing it, but I think the costs are just, I don't think anybody on this council would want to sit down and go through that cost deal to replace one.
Well, you brought up another point that there's also a cost on the roads that we are avoiding road maintenance costs by folks sticking with septic. So that's a good point. I don't see any other council questions. Now we'll open it up to the public. And you can kind of see the three question areas we have before us. We welcome your input.
Once again, my name is David Benson. I live in 3F Meadows. One question to Russ. Where's the nearest sewer to San Marcos Road?
This is a rare exception. I'm going to say go ahead and answer his question if you can.
You want to know where the...
But one of my leach fields is within 200 feet of the center line of the road.
So that's what we're talking about tonight, is we are looking at changing the rule. So the question you're raising is you may be within 200 feet. You won't be in within 200 feet of an existing sewer, so you just have to make your septic system work.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're happy for you to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the public? John Q. Welcome.
Good evening. Donald Cross, Tascadero. I'm not real wild about the fact that just adding a bedroom to your home is going to force you to hook up to the sewer. You know, you could split a family room in half and add, you know, add another bedroom to your house, and that could trigger having to hook up to the sewer. And that just doesn't make any sense to me. That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I don't think that is the case. This is a... Now, I don't know if it's part of California building code that when you look at adding a bedroom, you have to deal with the septic issue. Maybe a septic system or maybe sewer, I don't know. But would one of you like to kind of comment on that question while we have it?
Well, our sewer design standards... So if you have a one-bedroom house, you need, you know, the theory is you have fewer people in there. If you have a five-bedroom house, you need a much bigger septic system. So our standards are based on the number of bedrooms results in a longer leach field. So if you have a three-bedroom house and you add a bedroom, you have to show that your septic system still meets the standard for the extra bedroom. So you may have to add a leach field or upsize the septic tank size, but that is how our standards are set up.
Yeah. So I think the question was, though, you'd have to, if you added a bedroom, you'd have to tie into the sewer system, and the answer is no.
Not necessarily, right.
If you're already hooked up to the sewer system and you add a bedroom, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter.
If you are on a septic system and you add a bedroom, you have to demonstrate that you have capacity within your existing system, and if not, you might have to address that.
And let's be clear that the current standards, if that bedroom addition is over 400 square feet,
then... You're saying that I could just make the improvements to the septic system?
That's what we are going to consider tonight. So that's an alternative. Okay. Then we want to give the property owner more choice.
Correct. Thank you.
So that's question number two.
Yes.
If he's within 200 feet of a sewer and he adds a bedroom or over 400 square feet, right now you have to extend the sewer. So that's a question tonight, whether we want to continue that or not.
Thank you. Any other? We haven't closed public comment yet. Even if you're a fireman, we welcome you to join us for public comment. And seeing no one approach, we will close public comment, bring it back to council. And I want to stick. I don't see any questions being raised. I would like to take a chance at seeing if I can come to, I think what I hear is some consensus. So I'm going to go through one at a time and see if I can make a statement that kind of fits, and if we're close enough, because we're not really making a decision tonight, we're just giving you a general direction. If sewer fronts lot, do they connect if a septic system can work? And I think the answer is no. We're saying we want to give the property owner the choice of if they can have a septic system continue to work or expand it. That's their choice. They can choose whether they want to expand the septic system or hook to the sewer. That would be their choice. There's consensus on that. Would you need any other direction than that?
I just want to make sure. This would affect those reimbursement districts. Do you want to consider that at all?
Thank you. Yes, that was a... Let me... revisit that, because that was something we already stated. We want to understand those existing districts, and if we want to honor any commitments we've made. Councilwoman Moreno.
We also want to be cognizant of any pumping that would need to occur and, you know, the cost prohibitive nature of that, any uphill.
Yes, I think that again, would be more of the issue for the property owner if they can factor in what are the costs in either option, and they can choose. But
if we're looking at the reimbursement districts, and if we're looking at that and saying, okay, if somebody's lot fronts the sewer and this reimbursement district, we determine that really it is best for them to, and we're saying, you know, cost-wise, it's, you know, almost even. And we're saying go ahead and do that. But if somebody has the issue of needing to, you know, to pump upward, and we're saying that's really cost prohibitive.
Only a cost to that particular property owner. They'll have to weigh in whether that's cost effective for them or not. They may well decide they want to not tie into the system. However, if they're in an area that's an existing agreement, we may say, well, no, that's part of the old rules. So I don't know if we want to. It's a hybrid. We may want to address that separately. And I think we just ask staff to kind of parse that out. That's makes it a little tougher question. So there's two parts. You know, either it's cost effective for the individual or not, and they're in an existing agreement. If they're not in an agreement, it doesn't matter. It's just an individual choice. If they're in an agreement, but it's going to be more costly for one person and not another, are we still saying they both have to hook up because they're in an agreement area? So that's a little tougher question. Do you have any comments on that, City Manager? Can you address that?
I think that is the issue, and we're probably looking for some council direction on that particular issue for those parcels that are, you know, below grade, so they would have to pump. They are an existing reimbursement agreement. The existing reimbursement agreements don't appear to say that everybody has to pick up. It says the city will endeavor to enforce current codes and standards. So it was implied to those developers when they put that in that everybody would hook up because that was it. Whether they would win in court is certainly something up for the courts to decide. Whether we would be challenged, again, would be something that we go from there. So there is some risk there, but you know, we can have the city attorney analyze exactly how much, and you guys decide how much. You know, was that implied promise or not at the time?
Okay. So our lawyer will weigh in on it. So I'd like to stick to just that question. We do have lights up, but let's try to get closure on that piece before we get it more complicated on another item. So I've got Councilman Kelly followed by Councilman Fonzi. Any help you can give us on that question number one?
Just on the agreements that are in place. When they are made up, are all the properties that are subject to the agreement identified in the agreement? And is that a recorded document? So if somebody happens to buy a piece of property that they know...
And you have on number one, it says, if a property that proposes a new residence or has a failed septic system has a sewer main fronting the property, are they required to connect to the sewer rather than install or replace the septic system? I see a difference between what... that question asked and what you're asking here, that if we're going to talk about failed septic systems, we need to redefine that so whether we understand whether they're expanding it because they're putting an addition that's larger than 400 and some square feet. It may be a condition because they're selling their house and they need to install a newer leach field. The definition of failed is rather fuzzy in my mind. I'd like to see that tightened down. And I think the council may want to think about the new residence. Is there a benefit to installing if there's a new residence versus a septic already there on an existing residence?
I don't know if I can clarify that a little. The city doesn't make the determination if it's failed or not, unless there's a complaint through the code enforcement, then we would get involved. But most of the time, you know, people are coming to us, they've already, you know, through their escrow or through, you know, some review with engineer or something, they say, my septic system has failed, what can I do? Can I install a new leach field or do I have to extend the sewer? And so many times we have to tell them, you know, yes, you have to extend the sewer. So I don't know if that helps.
So I'm going to suggest, too, that What's good about this exercise for us is we realize why the engineers look at us kind of funny when we say, do something simple, and we find out, oh, okay, that's why he's an engineer and we're something else. But I think a way to approach this is we have an intention to make things better for as many people as we can. We don't have to fix every potential nuance. We may want to approach this, well, if we make it a little bit better for this category of folks that doesn't get into a few other cans of worms, see how that goes, and then we do more as we work our way in. It's better than just saying, well, we give up and let's just leave it as it is, because as it is, we know it creates a financial hardship for some folks. So maybe we can improve it without fixing every possible position there is. For example, it just that if your system hasn't, if you can repair your system and make it work, that's fine. You know, maybe we go as that far. Are we close? I'm going to ask the city engineer if you could maybe.
So if the question would be, does the council want to give them the option to install a leach field or septic system if they can show that it technically is feasible? So right now they have to install.
So I think the answer is yes. I think we have consensus on that, because if they can meet the current standards of the Water Board, they've done an amazing job.
Okay, so that's all we need on one.
So that's all we need for one.
That's consensus.
So we're going to quit while we're ahead on that. So now number two, if within 200 feet of an existing sewer, do they have to connect?
So that's the, right now it's black and white. If the sewer is within 200 feet, they have to extend it. They have to connect and extend it. So it's, two is just another question, because our rules are very specific about the within 200 feet. So if we're okay with one, I think we're okay with two.
Yes.
Okay. So that's good.
And so then that takes care of number.
So what was the final word on two?
Two would be if they can show that they can make a septic system work on their lot, whether they're within 200 feet.
So they have the option.
They have the option. Okay. And then on three is that rule that we have that's very defined. It says if and when you extend the sewer, you have to go all the way across the front of your property. So the question is, do we give them the opportunity to extend it to a convenient, you know, sewer connection point and just leave out across the entire frontage, or do we leave that in?
I am tending to give that to the choice of the property owner. They may say, I want to get it past my property, or they may say, I need to save every penny I can right now. I understand those two considerations, but is there a problem for the city or for other property owners other than the next person then has to deal with that? And there's a fairness issue of, gee, they only had to do this, but it's kind of a one time, the next person has the problem, absorbs that change in policy. From there on, it's kind of like everyone's going to be kind of pay the distance. So let me ask the city engineer, is there any consequence to the city by changing this in terms of it doesn't impact the city or the system in any way?
So when we get that sewer plan, and if it used to be, you know, this long and now it's only this long, there's a sense of fairness that if I need sewer for my lot, I should extend it as far as I need to serve my lot. And if that makes good engineering sense and it meets our standards, they should have that ability by making them extend it arbitrarily. You know, you could say it was arbitrarily across their entire frontage. You know, it almost implies you have to extend it farther than you need. So from a fairness standpoint, so I don't know. But so from a service planning, I think if everybody extends it across their frontage, then you know, they're all biting the bullet and chipping in for that.
Well, I like your response. We have a number of lights to go to, but you're saying it doesn't matter from a city engineering standpoint. We could give them the choice. If you want to go the shortest distance to make it work from an engineering standpoint, fine. If they choose to extend it farther, they could do that. And we have more discussion from Councilwoman Fonzie than... Oh, I'm sorry. Councilwoman Moreno first, then Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. I think my concern is something that Russ brought up when he first showed us that graph, and, or not graph, but that picture with the on Portola and, you know, the first, second, ABCD homeowners. And really what we're looking at is giving a financial break to the very first person. And from then on, you're back to, a significant cost for each of the subsequent homeowners. And in the essence of fairness, if we're talking about that, the policy has been in place to end of the property line. So to give one person a break and then everyone after is back to paying that full amount, that seems to me to not really be fair. We got one person getting a break and then everyone else is back to paying full boat.
So a way to average that is say everybody goes to the midpoint, whether you need to or not.
Well, but somebody may need to go further than the midpoint.
Well, then if they need to go further, then that's on them.
The whole property line.
Or you could do a future reimbursement, that if the next guy hooks up, you have to reimburse in the future.
Yeah, I would be thinking more across the property line.
We'll let the CPAs figure that one out. But a good point. And we're trying to find a way we are being fair, and there's always some unintended consequence, so I think it's good we're taking the time to talk this through. Councilman Fonzie.
Thank you. If every lot were the same frontage, it would make sense, and Lot D is going to be disaccommodated again, including his driveway. So it seems logical to me to take it to the edge of the lot as we have before. That's our current policy. It's worked well. I see no reason to change it.
So to the furthest extent, clear across the farthest point on their parcel. I am hearing consensus on that item, so let's see about that. We're saying on this aspect, stay with current policy is what Councilman Fonzie is suggesting, and that might kind of take care of some of that issue with existing agreements, and it keeps things predictable. We have added more choice to property owners, but we've also kept some predictability. So is there consensus on that recommendation? I'm seeing it's a consensus.
And I would like to call this options, that we're giving our homeowners options. I think this is a good way of terming this because it gives them more than just one choice that they have to make.
And Councilman Moreno, did you have another? Well, I think this has been a good exercise. I appreciate everyone's work because I think this is a case where we actually made it better by everybody participating and drawing from their experience. So. Good job, Council, and of course the staff always does a good job. So, is there anything else we could help with, or that's we left muddy or muddied it up for you that you we could help?
Three very clear answers, so that's good.
Rare occasion, very good. Then, are we concluded with that item? Very good. We'll move on to management reports, which there are none. Council announcements and reports, which I'm assuming there are none.
Reports.
Yes, Councilman Kelly has a report, and then Councilman Moreno.
As you know, I represent the city at the HSOC committee and the housing committee, and there seems to be quite an increase in homeless veterans that are coming back from the wars. I think in the last enumeration that they had, they were up to 235, 237, something like that. And coming this May 16th, 17th, and 18th down at the San Luis Obispo Veterans Building, they're going to have another what they call a stand down, where they try to gather up these homeless veterans and they'll take them down there for the 3 days and they'll feed them, provide them with haircuts. They have worked with past rebels where we could provide some transportation down to these folks down in San Luis Obispo. They can get haircuts, and I think talk about cost recovery. I think they've paid the price already dearly. So I think maybe in the future, I don't know if that needs to be an agenda item, but if we could bring it back and provide a couple different options on that. The other thing is Dana Cummings. I'll try to get him to come to one of the city council members. He's the director of the Veterans Assistance League here in the city. And the main problem that these veterans have, they take a year or two, a year and a half to get their benefits. just because most of them have some serious problems and they can't do the paperwork and what have you. And I have discussed with them of the possibility of providing a room here in City Hall. And I've talked to several people within the community who would be volunteers to help these people fill out the paperwork that they need. They've started it up in Pass Robles, and I think they started off with 1 day a week, and I think it's escalated to 2 or 3 days. It's become very popular. So maybe in the future, once again, we could bring it back to the City Council. We do have some guidelines about the use of different rooms and what have you in the City Hall, but I certainly would think this would be an opportunity where we could help our veterans, where we could make, just on a trial basis, maybe try out the one room once a week or two, every 2 weeks, whatever would be required. But I'd like to see us put that on the table and talk about it and see if we can help these folks up. It's an increasing problem. Last year, I believe, at the stand down, they had around 120 veterans down there. And this year, they hope to get 200. Also, at the HSOC committee, HSOC is going to be putting in for a $6 million grant to assist homeless veterans. And part of that grant, if they do get it, will be giving ECHO some money to have a part-time or full-time advocate to help the veterans. So we're finally getting the attention that these folks well deserve, and I hope that the City Council or the city here can help them out. So maybe we can get that on agenda at a future date and try to get that organized. So I would appreciate if we can get some cooperation and get it going. Thank you.
Thank you. We are kind of mixing in council announcements and reports and committee reports, so we'll go ahead and just work our way down the line with whatever you would like to comment on. Mayor Pro Tem Sturtevant.
The only thing I've got coming up on my agenda is the city schools meeting on March 28th, so we have that coming up, Tom.
Well, just thank you for getting it on my calendar.
Good.
Council, and I think we all got that. I was going to ask if Councilman Kelly would take the lead on that, since you are the appointed representative.
I brought that up to Rochelle this morning, because Craig Dacus, who's the PR man down there, and Linda Parsons, who's the executive director, they would love to have us come down here. I've been in town here for 38 years, and until I got on the Citizens Advisory Board, I had no idea what's going on back there. And it's very, very interesting. And I think you would be very impressed by taking a tour of the place. And I think, along with the Chamber of Commerce, we're trying to get a little better relationship. As I sit on these board meetings down there, the financial return that the city gets from the state hospital, I think I brought it up once before, and I'll do it again. Their budget is around $222 million. Roughly 70% of it goes towards payroll, and 90% of their employees live in town, and then you take the 7 multiplier. It's a significant part of this town, so along with the chamber, we're going to try to bond a little bit closer with them down there.
Good. Well, I think we do, and I have been approached about being involved with some of their events, and I think, yeah, it would be good for all of us. But if Councilman Kelly, you'd kind of keep that liaisoning going, and if I think maybe Rochelle, you could help. It'd be nice if we could all go together at one event, if that works out. But if it's going to be better to do individual tours, I think there's going to be some public, open to the public events that we could participate in as a council. And maybe the tours, we need to just set up some options that we can just sign up for some. But if you work with Councilman Kelly on that, I think we do all want to participate.
I'll do that.
Thank you. We'll continue on.
One more. Okay, it came to my attention, and this was through Rochelle, that the sandwich board signs are becoming an ADA hazard, and there have been lawsuits filed in other cities. It's something up and coming in terms of law, just like there was a guy that sued on the handicapped restroom some time back. And I think it's probably important at this point in time that we get this on the agenda to consider how we're going to handle this. Obviously, we have a lot of sandwich boards downtown, and we may need to ban them to be in compliance with ADA standards.
Yeah, good point. I think I would agree that we need to kind of address that point as soon as we can. I think it is a major insurance issue coming our way, so thank you for bringing that up. Councilman Moreno.
Do we need to agendize that, or that's Blades on Ice for an evening on ice this last Sunday? They opened it up to low-income families, and they had more than 50 first-time skaters. I was there for a while. It was fun to watch kids going around with like those big buckets like you'd get at Home Depot or something, and they're holding on to those, learning to skate. There was a band there. There were several sponsors of the event, and it was just really quite special, and I want to thank Derek and Nikki for doing that, and it's just another way that the generosity and community involvement that we've all come to know and love here in Atascadero continues on. So thank you.
Yes, I was co-hosted with Latino Outreach Council again, and that was I think the last night for the ice skating, but we'll be going on to roller skating, we hope, and we are continuing to work with them and the community to try to find a permanent location if we can. So I know Warren has done what he can on that and appreciate your work on that. I have a few things to report on. One, I would see it reminds me of Warren used to say, we can do anything, we just can't do everything, I think he said. And I think I'm concerned there are so many things we'd like to be involved and do. And I think our job is to kind of triage the best we can and be as efficient and effective as we can and partner where we can and continue to leverage the volunteer effort that we have. I think on the transportation issue, helping veterans, I think that's a good area. If you could fire me an email, I will work on that with the Regional Transportation Authority because we already have a bus system countywide. I think that's something that might fit under their criteria where I think we might be able to get some passes to distribute to each area.
Actually, the veterans can get a free pass. There's a gentleman in town that I kind of helped, and I took him to the Dial-A-Ride booth here.
Yeah.
And they can get free passes, and they are entitled to free rides.
So I think we can kind of help with that and make sure that folks are aware of it. A lot of it is informing folks of what resources are available. And I think when taking a look at office space, it's much like looking at events that we talked about. I think I'd like to approach that as if city manager doesn't have a plan for dealing with that. I think as a council, we need to look at, well, what criteria do we want to look at? Because everything we do does use up some staff time, and we're working for reception and a lot of those areas. So I think we want to help wherever we can, and we want to leverage it. We want to be fair to make sure we're considering all of the options. So I'll ask our city manager to think. Just reviewing some of the items I've been involved with, we did have, once again, our county mayor's roundtable up in Paso Robles. Of course, water, believe it or not, is always a topic, but we also had a topic of fracking, which is more of a well-drilling issue, but it is been involved in some areas of the county, and I've been approached by some of our local residents informing us of some of the pros and cons. You may well be approached as individuals because there's an effort to have all councils take a position recommending to the county. San Luis has already done so. Arroyo Grande has taken an approach, and one of the issues has to deal with the amount of water used in the process. We're talking millions of gallons per well. And there is the issue that normally you wouldn't pay too much attention to it, but it's a particular category that's exempt from most rules, like the Clean Water Act and others, so that local jurisdictions, if they don't give it some thought ahead of time, may find that they don't have as much input as they might like. I think it's premature for us to agendize, take a look at it. You may get some questions on it. I think there's going to be more information coming out even in the next number of months, that if it comes to our attention, we can take a look at it at that time. But I just wanted to bring it to your attention. You may get a call on that. We will have our Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting tomorrow, and though we had considered taking a look at plastic bags, a component of that, again, we are deferring because Supervisor Arnold, who and I had wanted to take a look at that, will be out of town because she has to attend she's on the state California of Governments committee. So we felt like we wanted to make sure she could participate. So I only bring that up because I've said we'd be touching that again, and we were going to delay that a little longer. And I think that is enough reports. If nobody else has any items, staff, any other thing to report? We are adjourned. Thank you. It's